Hello and welcome to College Admissions with Mark and Anna. Each week we talk about different college admissions topics and answer those tough questions you may be dealing with concerning getting into the college of your choice. We know how stressful this process can be, so each episode we try to make it easier to navigate. Now, here are your hosts, Anna Wren and Mark Hoffer.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. We are in the middle of a tumultuous time here in college admissions.
Yes, indeed we are. Obviously we've seen the news break about the admissions scandals going on this week.
Absolutely. I think, a good scandal, we're always captivated by something that's very salacious. And I think this is as an educator, I think this is a perfect learning opportunity, as we call it in the classroom. And I think this is a perfect example of how some of human nature's less positive characteristics that we've seen, such as greed, power, deceit, cheating, personal gain, all of these things are pretty much represented in some of the news that we've read happening at some of the colleges in the admissions process. So I thought, when talking to you, we might be able to take a step back and talk about some of the important characteristics of this current situation, but also talk about its relevance in college admissions as a whole, and also to identify really the things to focus on, the positive things of the process of getting into college. What do you think?
I think that's a great take on it, because I think as I've heard from different groups that I'm in, obviously this is a class issue as well. And I want families, and we both want families, to understand that regardless of the resources you do have, that there are actually measures already being put in place to help increase access that maybe people don't know about. And that, while college admissions is not necessarily fair, quote unquote, that there are definitely advocates trying to do right and make it more fair.
I totally agree. And I think that's a reason, one of the nice things, we started doing this podcast basically because we wanted to get information out to everybody, not just those who can afford, to hire somebody and identify how to get into college, but actually to provide resources so that everyone has a chance to compete at any level. And I think one of the things that we've tried to do on the podcast is identify that, tenacity and integrity and hard work and creativity and those kind of characteristics are the ones that we really hope students are able to highlight in their admissions process and in their applications. And I think that's the thing to focus on and not really make our focus on those things that are salacious and so much media driven.
Yes, I would also add the word authenticity.
Authenticity, that's a good one.
Because I think even with who the media is choosing to speak to, I think, people read about, kids who do this and who do that, but there are definitely people out there who are, I would say, bordering on fabricating factors that are not genuine in the admissions profile of students. So that's why I think it's really important, to always remember to be true, right? True to yourself, because that's the best way to find the best fit school and major and et cetera.
Exactly. I think both of us, we work with students, and one of the first things we try to do is have them identify their academic and personal mission so that when they are looking at schools, that their mission matches the school's mission. And I think that can really drive the schools that you apply to. And it also very much drives your application and what you want to put forward and how you represent yourself. And I think that's one of the things that is really important about the whole situation is, are you applying to college for all the right reasons? And I think that's one of the things that gets mixed up when we start looking at all these little things that are going on in the admissions process that may not be so positive.
That's a great point. So why don't we kickstart with some myth-busting?
Myth-busting. Yeah, I think it's important that you take a step back and put a frame on how big this scandal is, because although it's really been blown in, blown out of proportion, I would believe, in a lot of cases, because it's so media driven and so driven by the amount of money that we hear and some of the fees and some of the people that are involved. I think it's really important to take a step back and look at the bigger picture and see how significant is this actual scandal in the bigger picture of college admissions.
Right. And it's, and you know, let's go through some of the facts and figures, Mark.
Absolutely. I think one of the first ones, so we've only heard about a couple of very elite schools that are being talked about in this scandal. And I think it's really important to that students and families recognize there's over 3,000 colleges in the U.S. And while we're talking about the scandal, you also have to understand this scandal is mostly the very elite, those that are 10% and lower acceptance rates. And you have to remember that 80% of the colleges in the U.S. accept at least 50% of their applicants. So, you know, when we're talking about this scandal, we're talking about a very small handful of schools. There's only 30 schools in, pretty much, give or take, in the U.S. that have a acceptance rate below 15%. And I think that that's a really important thing to remember. We're talking about a very small elite group of schools with very, very low acceptance rates. It's not the other, you know, 2,999 schools that are out there.
That is true. And I like how you were also talking about, like, so even some schools have talked about not publishing the rate because of how it fuels competition. And some people, you know, based on the acceptance rate and obviously reputation, will apply for a school. But that's never the right reason to apply for school, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think just being... if a school is good just because it's hard to get into, you've missed the entire premise of why you should be going to college. And there again, it's driven by mission. What is your mission and what do you want to accomplish in college and learn? And does that school provide exactly those things? And a lot of times I think students and families, both, they are driven by, do I know the name of the school? Is it prestigious? That really doesn't have much to do with, is it a good learning environment for you? And I think that's really important to get out there.
Absolutely true. And I would also argue that in this case, it's very much about, like you said, prestige and almost status, kind of like having that LV bag, having my child with the Stanford diploma. So I think, you know, having that piece of paper doesn't necessarily mean your child will be successful. So, you know, it's important to keep in hand, you know, what the student has in mind.
Oh, exactly. And I mean, you talk about prestige and what drives people to do some things. And one of the things that I had no idea, I'd never heard of, never even contemplated, that's come out in this scandal is the whole idea of photoshopping somebody's face onto somebody else's body who's an athlete so that you can put that in your applications profile. I had no idea. And that one actually floored me.
It was so funny. So I think all of the listeners know now that I'm a Georgetown alum. And obviously we are one of the schools listed in the scandal. And what I found was so funny is like my fellow classmates and I were joking and saying like, oh, that's why they ask for a picture on your application.
Yeah, you and shoot, if I knew Photoshop was available, you know, I'd just take George Clooney's face and put it on my body. That would be. I don't know. I think it's the wrong direction, but and one of the things in putting this in perspective, if this scandal included 1,000 students, which there is I seriously doubt it's more than
I don't think it does.
And right now, I mean, the ones they're identifying, it's not very many students. But if we were to say it was 1,000 students, if we know that, you know, 2.2 or something like that million students apply to college, it's not even a fraction of a fraction of the actual application pool that are applying to college over the year. So I think that's really another thing to keep this thing in perspective is how much it really has an influence and an impact on the overall application pool.
Yes, because I know a lot of people are angry that, you know, they said, you know, obviously that spots were taken from well-deserving students, and I would not argue against that. However, at the same time, it is such a minute percentage that, you know, I don't think you could count on that as that one spot was stolen.
Agreed.
Your child necessarily.
Agreed. So. Yes. We do know that spots were taken by students who probably didn't actually deserve them, and they hadn't worked for them. Did that happen? It apparently is very obvious that it did happen, and there are some cases where that has actually occurred. But I think, you know, the number of spots that were removed from the ability for other students to actually get in is going to be so extremely small. But that also, I think we found out this morning that there are students and families who are suing universities because
Correct.
They believe that their spot was taken away.
Yes, there's a class action lawsuit started. So let's go on, because Mark and I are not legal experts by any means.
By any means.
So let's go on and let's talk about another central situation to this scandal is the standardized test.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, as I think every college admissions advisor that's out there has a special spot in their heart for the standardized testing conglomerates. And I think we all know that it's a necessary evil that we deal with, but one of the things that's come out in this scandal are there again a couple of very small number of instances where SAT scores were either modified or someone else took the test for them. We know that this has been going on since the SAT was first administered. Mm-hmm. So I think this is just another occurrence of showing where human nature shows that if there's any way that you know, somebody can cheat, and I think that the testing companies try to minimize the possibilities of that, and I think the number of people who are cheating on the SAT are really, really small, because right now we know that about 1.5 million students take the SAT and an equal amount take the ACT, and even if there are a handful of people who manage to cheat, it's such a small, infinitesimal fraction of the number of tests that are taken that we do need to keep that in perspective.
Yes, and I would also say, like, in terms of us talking about what are things that, you know, because there's a lot of people involved in this idea of creating access or improving access for underserved populations in higher education. And one of those things is that more and more schools have gone test optional.
Yeah.
And I think they can do that because we were at the IECA conference, and for example, it's not like they don't know that, you know, family income is correlated with test improvement. So, you know, that difference between the 32 to the 36 might not be that much of a deal, a big deal. So it's not that you have to spend, you know, or have access to thousands of dollars for test prep.
Well, and I think that I mentioned this to almost all the students that I work with and all parents, that we have some incredible resources that are free to everyone. Khan Academy is
yes.
Probably the most well-known and probably the most effective. And the thing is, I know students who have used just Khan Academy and received incredible scores. It's the diligence and it is the, you know, the grit and tenacity to actually sit down. And we know that taking multiple full-length online tests and practice, that's the best way to get better at the SAT and increase your score. But I think it's really important to also talk about the 800-pound gorilla in the room with standardized tests, and that's all the test companies know. There is very little, if any, correlation between a high test score on ACT or SAT and future performance in college. We know this, and schools are now reacting to that reality and the pressure from the public that if we know this, why are we using it? And more well-known schools are dropping the SAT as a requirement.
Why don't you share some of them?
Oh, some of the good ones. Well, just recently, I mean, the most famous one is University of Chicago, who basically stepped up and said, we know that it isn't a predictor. We're not going to play that game. And so that they're you know, one of the most well-known. George Washington, Brandeis, Pitzer. These are other schools that are choosing not to play the game.
Right. I think Bucknell actually just went test optional recently as well.
Oh, yeah. And that's one that wasn't on my list. So, and the list is getting longer by the day. And I think it's pretty much as some of the more recognized schools like University of Chicago step up and say, we are not willing to play that game. We're going to see many, many more of the well-known schools who are going to take suit.
And I would also advise that if you have a really good advisor, like I get approached all the time about test prep and, Oh, my kids should sign up for this class or that class. And I am probably a test prep company's worst enemy, not purposely, but honestly, because depending on the student, sometimes they don't need a course. Sometimes they're just not as strong in certain concepts. And in that case, a tutor would work better. So, you know, in that sense, I don't believe test prep is worth tens of thousands of dollars, you know, to improve a score, especially after hearing from admissions that an improvement might not make a difference
in their application and their admission. Exactly. And we hear that from admissions representatives that, you know, the difference between a 32 and a 33 is not going to usually be the difference between them getting in. It'll be something else.
And if you're
paying $10,000 for that 1 point.
I think I've heard numerous times, it's not the score and it's not your GPA that gets you accepted.
Well, and we hear more and more from representatives and with SAT and standardized tests kind of being pushed to the side as a big part of the evaluation, we hear from admissions representatives that the biggest thing is they want to hear that a student knows their mission and what they're about and why they're going to college and make sure that they know why that college is the right place for them. And I think that is what we're hearing from admissions is if they are able to represent that in their application, that's at least as much a representation of the evaluation as their SAT scores.
Correct. Let's go ahead and dive in and talk about, now that we've touched on the reality of testing, let's talk about the reality of the role that coaches and admissions plays.
Right. And I think that's actually one of the things that's important to recognize in this whole scandal. One of the big issues, and we've heard this from people who are stepping up, who are admissions representatives of schools and at schools who are involved, as well as you know, those who are counselors and admissions advisors, that a lot of these issues have to deal with coaches and with student athletes. And that is a big part of the reason why I think we're hearing about this, is because that's one of the easy targets. And it's actually, because it deals with sports and money, I think it gains the public eye really quickly. But I think it's important. There are so many incredible coaches and admissions representatives out there who are working unbelievable hours and working for students and families, that when coaches who are working with student athletes to be the best that they possibly can be, when they hear of these bad apples and bad actors that are coaches, it puts them all in a bad light, and they don't appreciate it either.
Yes, I do absolutely agree with you. And I actually have interesting perspective on this, both from helping recruited athletes, and also from actually working in an athletic office when I was a student at Georgetown. And I would say that obviously basketball is the sport at Georgetown. I didn't work in that department. But I know, for example, the department that I did work in, our coach would check the scores and grades. On the interest form. And if they didn't meet certain criteria, they just were put in a different pile in which she wouldn't follow. So, you know, at least with that coach and that team that I was working with, academics, and they knew academic integrity is really important, and they wanted students that not only played well in terms of the sport, but also were great students as well, in terms of representing the university. So I could say that. And also what I would say in terms of admissions representatives, I was friends with someone in college, and their parents had good connections at Georgetown, and their father was a very wealthy donor to the school. And so when my friend's sibling applied, they actually received a call from the university to explain that they were really sorry, but they could not accept their child, and that they, you know, as much as they appreciate the donations and everything, but that they did have certain criteria, and they encouraged, you know, the student to attend somewhere else first, really work to bring their grades up, and then apply for a transfer later on. So I do want to say that, you know, I think most people in the university setting and involved with admissions is ethical, and they do have standards that they strictly adhere to.
I think that's another part of the percentage and the size of this scandal. There are so many people that we aren't celebrating that are part of colleges and professors and coaches and admissions who are working an incredible amount in favor of making sure that students are supported and everybody gets the best possible education they can. And it's unfortunate that we're having the conversation about just this very small fraction of people who have decided to cheat and not play by the rules. So I think it's an opportunity to celebrate those that we know are doing a good job and doing it ethically and morally and driven by a very strong mission-driven component, that we take a step back and remember that it's a very small component of people who are not acting the best way that they could.
And the majority of students that are athletes, because I have seen a lot of athletes get backlash in this, yep, as well, they are qualified. The majority of them are very much qualified. I worked with a student who was an athlete, and she more than qualified academically and in every other way for that university.
Oh yeah, and I think coaches are constantly, I think a majority of coaches would love to bring on a student who is an incredible athlete, but they just don't have the academic credentials, or they, at least at the time that they're applying, to be able to have that coach say, we'd like to have you on the team. And in a lot of cases, that's why they're not getting admitted, is because they don't have the academic credibility to be able to represent the university as a student athlete.
Correct.
That's a big part of it.
And I guess we'll do this one next, because this one also boils people's blood, and we'll save the best for last, so to speak. But how money really does play a factor in admissions, what the truth is versus fabrications.
Well, and so if you were to look at how people can influence the system, what are the ways that you know and that have gone on for a long time and will continue to be part of the reality of most colleges are a business. You have to satisfy your bottom line. You have to actually have a structure in which you know, you can conduct business. So what are some of the ways that you know of?
So I remember when I attended my first conference, and there were obviously admissions reps there, and someone was explaining, and they're not proud of it either. You know, I want to put that out there. Admissions is not necessarily proud of this, but unless the school is need blind, meaning they don't factor in the money component or how much your parents can pay for college, that money does play a factor in the admissions decision. So because, like you said, it's a business, and I was told that for every scholarship student or aid student, they needed a full pay student. And yeah, so sometimes certain students that might be on the border might get in because they come from full pay families, and how they determine that is, like, you see the box right on the application, you know, will you be applying for financial aid? Part of it is, yes, they want to be able to match your FAFSA up with your application. But part of it is also knowing that you're going to be a full pay kid and how that kind of factors into the admissions decision. But what I would say is, in terms of admissions not being proud of that fact, is that I've often been told by different admissions representatives is, if you have a student who needs money, right, to please have them apply as early as possible in the process, because that way it's not really, it's not going to be as much of a factor for admissions or aid. So if they apply early, they have an increased chance of not only getting good aid, but also admissions as well.
Exactly. And I think this is one of the things that, to me, that I speak out on this as one of the main pieces of the knowledge pie that actually acts as one of the leveling playing parts of leveling the playing field for students who are not of means. And that is knowing about the early action application process. And the reason why the difference between colleges, between early access and general decision, can often be double in the percentage of your acceptance rates. And unless you know about that, and unless you have people who can help you know the deadlines that are involved with hitting that November 1st date versus the general date, you may not know that you are giving yourself an incredible disadvantage by going general pool versus early action. And not having access to that knowledge base, I think, is a real disadvantage for those students who don't have the resources of people to at least let them know that those actions are available to them.
Yes. And also that, so a lot of people said, oh, I'm not surprised by this scandal. And I think that's because they're referring to donations to the school. And so obviously, you know, but the donations are typically, like you've seen some people say, 7 to 8 figures. So yes, it does factor in, but it's not a guarantee necessarily.
Right. And I think that one of the athletes, I think, that it was identified in this scandal was, the coach was basically given $400,000. That's a whole different level of numbers of zeros that we're talking about. And there aren't a lot of people who can do that.
Right. Correct. So let's the last piece that Mark and I have to discuss, because it is kind of the guy is the orchestrator, is the role that college admissions or independent consultants play and the reality of our role in college admissions.
Right. And I think that's one of the things. We represent a group of people who on the whole are all trying to help students and families navigate the system in the least stressful way and be the most successful in identifying schools that are a good fit for them. And I think that's one of the things, the number of advisors who have been identified in this scandal, that is not what was driving them. It was obviously greed and money. And I think that's one of the things that when you're looking for somebody to help you through the process, there are certain things to look for. So what would you recommend somebody who's looking for an advisor to navigate the admissions process? What do you say that they should look for?
So that's a great question. And so one of the things is, Mark and I are both part of IECA. It's an organization. And I think we are, you know, all of us believe in certain principles, including being ethical and really reducing stress for families, because actually some consultants, quote unquote, actually increase stress for their clients, and that's not what we do. I would also say about picking a consultant based on fit, just like we talk about for college, but consultants as well. And it should not be, the question shouldn't be, can you get my child into this school? And that actually can sometimes scare me from taking on certain families I work with, because my goal is to not help your child necessarily get into a specific school unless it's based on fit, but rather to help your child get the best out of this process, get the most out of this process in terms of helping them develop and become more independent and confident in what they're saying, get to know themselves better, and really reduce the stress and anxiety related to the process itself. So I think that's one of the things. And unfortunately, and you and I talk about this a lot, Mark, but the consultants that are highlighted in the media most of the time, unfortunately, are highlighted because they make for really good reads. They aren't necessarily the most qualified consultants, nor are they, I think, the most ethical ones. Because I would say, like, consultants, like, people are like, oh, they charge exorbitant money, you know. But the truth is, most consultants work pro bono and are also passionate about increasing access to higher education.
Right. And I think most of the consultants that we know, they give away probably as much information as that they charge for. And basically because they're a believer in we all do better when we all do better. And I think that's a good way to approach consulting in the first place. But I think when you and I were reading through some of the media that was generated from this investigation, finding out some of the fees that some consultants are charging, I think took a lot of us back to find out that A, people thought that they could provide a service that was of that value, and B, that there were people who were willing to pay that. And I think you've said it before. It's when you prey on somebody's desperation, that is a very icky place to operate from.
Yes. And I think some consultants feel like the market can, you know, deem the price, and I can understand that. And so I would say, like, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
A classic case of just because you can, should you? Yes.
Right. So let's dive into what we should focus on.
Yeah, let's switch gears. Let's talk about, okay, there's this scandal going on, and it's a very small percentage of people who are not playing by the rules. And let's talk about some of the things that we've covered in a lot of different episodes and things that we try to focus on with our students that we work with. And those are the things that allow them to compete on the level playing field as much as it is level. And make sure that they are diving into the application process as well equipped as possible. So what are some of the things that we really know will help a student be competitive in the application process?
And I think the interesting thing to note about being competitive in the process is it doesn't cost
right
thousands of dollars to do this. You could do this with your kids on your own.
Yep.
I believe in, so I think the first one is stories. And so as schools go test optional, it becomes even more important as the process becomes holistic and they take it, a view of the application as a whole for, you know, you, the student, to really be authentic and genuine. And that comes across through both your essays, but also through the letters of recommendation.
Exactly.
And what people have to say about you. And I think a lot of students take for granted the letter of recommendation. I know a lot of work goes into the essay most of the time, but like when teachers give you brag sheets and stuff to fill out, or, you know, for example, Mark, I'm sure you and I encourage our students to speak with their teachers and build that relationship. It's so that when they write about you, they actually, it comes from a place that's genuine.
We know that in speaking with the, as SAT is becoming a smaller part, because we know it doesn't indicate how successful you're going to be in college, we hear from representatives what are the pieces that they're using to evaluate students in their applications. And we know that essays and recommendations are becoming more important in the process. I actually have a brag sheet template that I give to students. We go through it, make sure that it's letter perfect. And I actually go through, I have them give a formal ask of the teachers that they are asking for a letter of recommendation for their college applications, because we know it's an important part. And one of the things about your story, we hear this from representatives, if your story is the same and it's consistent through your essays and your recommendations, your extracurricular support, that same story, that's one of the most valuable things of your application. It can make it the competitive application in a pool if that story is clear, concise. And I think one of the things that students must remember, if they are trying to force something and trying to tell a story that isn't theirs, that's where admissions representatives see a yellow flag go up.
Yes, and I think that leads to our next point in terms of what is on the applicant's side, and that's time and preparation.
Yeah, I think all consultants, we wish that we'd had more time to work with students in the preparation in the runway towards their junior year and applying to colleges. And I think that's one thing that the parents who have the luxury and are the foresight to see if we start earlier, this will be less stressful and probably more successful. Those are things that really help a student more than anything. But they are, again, like you say, that's a free thing. Starting early, that's free. You can start doing a lot of these things on your own. And I think that's one of the important things. You don't have to pay somebody to study and get good grades.
That is true. You don't. And you don't have to. I think the other thing is, like, a lot of people think you have to hire someone to work on the essay with your child. I've heard of plenty of parents that work with their children to get there just fine. I think you just have to make sure you maintain the balance in terms of it being the student's product. And sometimes we as parents can sometimes overstep boundaries, obviously because we care a lot about our children. Yeah. But I think as long as you can remember that this is their story to tell and they should tell it in a way that is most authentic and genuine for them, that's perfectly fine and is the way to go. And having the time to go through those and refine not only the personal essay, but the supplementals as well, can really have an impact on how the student comes across. And, you know, we talked about how scores and GPA is not the deciding factor, but I would say to a degree, a stellar letter of rec, a stellar essay can sometimes be the factor that puts you in. It's not always the factor, but it can sometimes be a factor.
Absolutely. We hear that from representatives all the time. When you have students that come in with the same metrics, SAT scores and GPA, and that often the deciding factor can be how well did they tell their story. I think about 2 years ago, I got schooled by a student when I was trying to explain your story and what that meant. And after I got done, he looks at me and he says, "Oh, you mean my brand?" And I said, "Ooh." And he says, "Well, basically you're describing what is my brand, what is my mission, what are the characteristics that set me apart and make me more valuable to a university than another." And I went, "Yeah, that's exactly it. It's basically, what are your characteristics that set you apart? What do you do well? What do you know about yourself? What's special about you and what drives you to perform?" And I think that's one of the things, I guess, if you want to create your brand, realize that you're doing that through your high school career from the day and earlier. It's basically, who are you and what are you about? And I think that's part of your story.
It is. And I think it's important to remember, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. So when you fall asleep in class or you roll your eyes at something your teacher is saying, they note that. Oh. So just as, you know, a stellar letter of rec can help you stand out, a not so stellar letter of rec can also sink you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, the letters of recommendation. And having been I was in the classroom for 10 years, and I tell students, this is the reason why I have my students actually ask their recommendation writers, the teachers who are going to write those recommendations. I have them do a formal ask, go in, set a time, introduce themselves and their brag sheet and why they're asking for a letter of recommendation before school gets out.
Correct.
Of their junior year. And basically so that teacher recognizes this is somebody who's responsible, respectful, and mature enough to do that and think about it ahead of time and respect the teacher's time. And having been a teacher, I can tell you that act alone, I'm going to write a better letter of recommendation. So it's the time thing.
They've also made it easier for the recommender as well when you supply that brag sheet.
Oh, yeah.
And more time, and it's not like, oh, can I have my recommendation next week?
Yeah.
So I think help your recommenders help you.
Well, and some people say, well, are you leading the witness with when you give a brag sheet to a teacher? And I nod and I say, absolutely. And basically, if you can bring to that teacher's recollection of things that you've done and they know about but might have forgotten, that's not leading the witness. That's just reminding. And that's okay. And it makes it easier to write the letter of recommendation and highlight the things the student will probably highlight in other parts of the application.
Great point. And let's touch on testing real quick too. So obviously, the more you prepare, the better you do. But again, like we said, there's Khan Academy. It's free. It's free. And I have a student, and you can share a personal story too, that, and sometimes it's just the test, figuring out which is the better test for you as a student. I had a student who was not happy with their SAT score, and we just had a talk. I had them take a practice ACT. I said, switch over to the ACT, focus on areas that, you know, you might need a little brushing up on. And I would say, like, you don't even have to spend a ton of time. I said, I'm not going to be the slave driver, right? If you can spend 2 hours of meaningful, focused time prepping those areas, that's enough for me. And let's go take the test. And I received a note. She got a perfect score across all the subjects.
Oh, boy.
So sometimes it's just being, you know, again, being disciplined enough to do what you need to do.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that you and I know, those counselors who work overseas, and when there are students who know that the one way that they can control something on their application to compete with students in the U.S. is going to be the test, it's amazing how diligent their study habits become on taking that test. And we know that there are a lot of students who are from abroad that, you know, a 1500 is a low score. And I think that's one thing that students in the U.S., if they understood what they're competing against, people who are so diligent in the way that they practice and the way that they study for the test, that might knock them up a level. And we also know it's really quite clear, the research and evidence shows that if you take online free, there again, thank you, Salcon, free online full-length tests, and you identify those areas that you are still weak, study in between, take another free online test, study in between, that you can really raise your score, especially in math.
Yes, and I think people don't realize that oftentimes the reason they don't score as well in the real test versus the practices that they've been doing at the test centers or test prep centers is because it's not the full length. I always tell my students, recreate the conditions of the test. Take it on a weekend morning. You're tired, I know, but that's what you're going to face on the real test. So as much as you can do that, that will help prepare you.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that I tell students. I say, students and parents, if the student has the discipline to be able to get up on a Saturday and take a full-length online test, study the scores, study the material that they need to improve, and do that in a diligent and fashion where they don't need hand-holding, great. Let's let them do that on their own. You'll save a lot of money and probably get similar results to having taken a prep course. However, if you know the student is one who needs to have a place and a time on which to take the tests and to study, then maybe a test prep course that provides that time and place will work well for them. So that's one of the reasons why I think the test prep companies actually do provide a service that some students actually need.
No, they're definitely, I think it just depends on the needs of the students.
For sure. What's the greatest improvement you've seen somebody between taking two SAT tests?
That's a great question. I think in terms of SAT, it would probably be like maybe 200 to 300 points.
Yeah.
How about you?
That was, I think, 225 or 230 was the biggest jump that I previously knew. Then last year, a young woman who basically outlined exactly how she did it in 6 months, taking online free practice tests, she took the SAT and she got a 1080. That was her first score for a real SAT. In 6 months, she basically took online practice tests every other week. She studied 4 to 6 hours in between on the very specific and intentional study questions that she needed. And in 6 months, she went from a 1080 to a 1480. And I didn't think that was possible, but this was somebody who had a lot of test anxiety to start with. And basically they got into the groove of sitting down, knowing when the breaks were, knowing what the pace of the questions were. And that's how she improved so much. She reduced her anxiety in an incredible amount. And she also reviewed the material and became a master of it. So it is possible. I didn't think that was possible, but that's pretty incredible.
Yes, absolutely. So what should students and families be concerned with? We've covered a few already. So one is knowing the early decision and action process.
Oh, for sure. I mean, my favorite examples are Stanford. If you do early admissions, there's early restricted. Their percentage of acceptance there is just a little over 10%. But if you're general pool, it's 4.5%. But it's even more so in some of the more elite, in some of the elite schools where their acceptance rate is real low, like UPenn. It's three times higher if you apply early than in the general pool. So if you just know that, get your ducks in a row, get your application, dialed in and perfect, and apply early.
I would say the downside to Penn, though, is their early decision versus like Yale and Princeton that are early action as well.
Yes.
So I would say definitely if you're going to early decision and make that financial commitment, just make sure you've run your net price calculator so you can afford it.
Yeah, that early, I don't know about you, but even saying early decision to me, just because of the numbers of zeros that are involved or could be involved, it's a scary, scary thing.
It is, but you don't have to bribe anyone, right?
Yeah.
So, but that guarantee that mom and dad are going to pay for you to go, that does have weight.
No Photoshop required.
Yes. Well, we talked about free resources, right? You would think
sure. You're
doing a commercial for Khan Academy. We're not, but they are a great resource.
Khan Academy. I've heard of this podcast, Mark and Anna's College Admissions Podcast. I think that's pretty incredible.
And a bunch of podcasts, not just even ours, right? There are so many great podcasts on the college admissions process and so many great resources provided, I would say, through even IECA or consultants associated with IECA.
Yep.
There's also something called Project Greenlight. Are you familiar with that, Mark?
Project Greenlight, is that fly-in programs?
It is fly-in programs, but they also just provide news on other programs for increased access for underserved populations.
Yeah, I know. As a matter of fact, that's, I think, one of the other things that people really need to know about, especially if they're coming from a disadvantaged economical situation. The thing is, schools who recognize that you have the potential, academic and social and personal potential, and you have the scores and the credibility for them to say, we think you are the real deal, they'll fly you out to their school to visit. And there are a lot of schools that participate in fly-in programs. And I know Project Greenlight is one of the ones that lists the schools so that you can identify, apply to, you know, get flown in. And that way you get a chance to visit the school and see what it's about.
And I think, again, the more you know, the more you can take advantage of, right? Yeah. So my own brother took advantage of the fly-in programs at some of the schools. So, you know, just because your family may not have access to money doesn't mean you can't go check out a school.
Yep. Start early and no resources.
Yes. The next thing I would say is doing your research, right? So Mark talked about this earlier, how we've talked with admissions representatives, and one of the major factors in determining whether or not they accept a student is if you have shown them fit, if you can show them how you're a good fit for their university. And that all has to do with creating very specific, intentional supplements, right, Mark?
Exactly. That's one of the things we hear from representatives and those schools that have the why whatever college you're applying to essay. It's a supplemental essay. It's called the YX college essay. And I think this is a perfect example. Have you done your research? Do you know what the school's mission is? Do you know your mission? Do those missions align? And if you can provide evidence that is supporting why your mission matches their mission, and you know their mission, that is exactly why schools want to know that you've done your research and that they're the university for you.
Yes, and I would also add that apply early, like we talked about before, because, you know, money is a factor. So applying early increases your chance, not just for admissions, but for scholarship money too.
Yeah, and we hear that from representatives. They say apply early because they have money then. As the application process goes along and general pool goes in, they have less and less money. So why not be in line first?
Great point. What else should students of this generation be working on?
Oh, I'm going to get on the soapbox. You know, as a person who is in the tech industry and loves science and all of the bells and whistles that go along with it. One of the things that we are finding out and the research is showing, you know, spending a lot of time on screens that has nothing to do with school and your academics and personal development. If you're spending the national average for a teen, from 13 to 19 last year was just a little over 8 hours of screen time per day that was not academic oriented. So if that's 8 hours per day that you're flushing, it might be a place where you can look at to spend maybe 1 hour of that on Khan Academy trying to bump up your SAT score so that you can compete at any school.
Yes, and I would also add that bumping up your score also helps increase your chances of getting merit aid. So yep. We didn't talk about that, but if you do need money, that's another good reason because it does pay financially to really invest that time.
Oh, for sure. I tell when students and families, when I meet with them and I tell them, I don't want to support SAT and testing and standardized testing, but I do have to let you know the reality. A difference between a 1300 and a 1400, or a 1300 and a 1450, can mean thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of aid. Mm-hmm. So, do you want to put in the time to get that extra 100 points? If money is an issue, I would highly recommend it.
Great point. And lastly, I think we talked about just going out there and building connections. I think that was our first podcast episode ever. It was about the importance of building relationships. And I think learning to be respectful of the people you meet. And also when you build connections, you never know where they'll lead. And I also feel like they will. That in itself is a learning experience. And will enrich who you are as an applicant.
Exactly. I think that's one thing. As a former teacher, as a former classroom teacher, I still am in touch with hundreds of my students, which had somebody told me when I was in the classroom that would be something 20 years down the line I would still be doing, I had no idea. And it's those students who made the effort to come in and talk, you know, and let me know what's going on, let me know how I could provide them more support in the academic areas as well as socially. And I think that's one thing that students don't realize when they are going to high school, and even as freshmen, go in and talk to your teachers, even teachers that you won't have until your senior year. And just introduce yourself and say, you know, I'm excited to take your class in a couple of years from now. Are there things that you would recommend that I, you know, focus on to be as successful as possible when I get here? Mm. And those kind of conversations, students have no idea that 4 years later, when the recommendation letter comes into a college and it says, I've known this student since they were a freshman and I had no idea who they were. And they came in and they introduced themselves. That's the kind of thing that makes a recommendation move to a whole different level.
That's a great point. And I would also add that it's not just academic relationships.
Yep.
Really foster your network and your learning experiences outside of school as well. I don't think I've ever touched upon this, but so one of the most beneficial experiences I think I've had in my life is that my parents owned a restaurant when we were growing up. And also I worked as a waiter in restaurants later on as well, just for money. And I think it was the most awesome profession in some ways, because I met people from all walks of life facing all different kinds of situations. And I feel like depending on the circumstances with which we are provided, we live in a bubble. And what I would challenge students to do is go pop that bubble. Go meet different people safely in a safe environment. But I challenge you to just wander outside of your comfort zone and walk in other people's shoes.
I tell students to practice 20 seconds of insane courage. And I stole that line from We Bought a Zoo, the movie. And basically it's the idea of, yeah, I'm anxious about going and talking to somebody I don't know. Practice 20 seconds of insane courage and just lean in a little bit to discomfort and talk to somebody. And you never know what door that's going to open. I think it's interesting. You actually were, you waited tables. My wife and I both have waited tables. And I think my wife and I talk about this as an important part of who we are, because you learn to deal with everybody in public. You learn how to strike up a conversation. You learn how to be polite in sometimes very unpolite situations. And I think those things, like you say, those can make the difference of how you interact in college later when you get there.
And also, I think another piece is humility. And for those of you that do have interviews, you'd be surprised at how much you shine based on your life experiences.
I tell students there is nothing more attractive than a teenager who has humble swagger. And humble swagger meaning somebody who knows that they have an A game, but they're not going to tell you because they know there's always somebody else who has a better game than they do. Mm-hmm. And the reality, that balance of being confident, but also being humble. And I think you're right. I think that can be a huge indicator of person and character.
Great point. So let's end our session on a high note.
On a high note.
Obviously not, you know, not too high. But what would you say, obviously this is a huge issue going on right now. Are you getting asked about the role that college consultants play, obviously the scandal, and how are you responding?
Oh, sure. Yeah. One of the things I do, I've done TV and radio interviews and I've been contacted by parents and here in the last day. And one of the things that I really want them to know, the college admissions process on a whole is actually a pretty level playing field, in that if you know the game and you know what things are involved and you start early, you are competing with everybody pretty much on a level playing field. However, keep in mind, there is always going to be, and I think this scandal is just one instance of the very small number of people who are always going to not play by the rules. And you can't let that dissuade you, and you can't let it distract you from doing the things you need to do to present yourself. And I think you said it as early on, in the most authentic way possible.
Yes. That's a great point, Mark. I would say I haven't actually had parents ask me this question yet. But I had this discussion with a student of mine. I don't know if you've ever been asked. Someone asked me the other day how much I get paid.
Yep.
And I'm fairly forthcoming, and I'm honest, and I'm like, so the common industry standard is to even break even within the first 5 years in our industry is considered amazing.
Yep.
And so some people have been asking and talking about how a lot of us are in this for the money. And I honestly would say that could not be further from the truth. Most of us do this either because of personal reasons, in terms of, you know, it being a convenient profession based on whatever is going on in our family lives. So a lot of us are women. Mark, you are quite an exception. You're the unicorn. or a lot of times it's for fulfillment. And, you know, we are part of this because we do know about how unfair, quote unquote, the process can be. And we're trying to find ways to increase access and reach out and help populations that really need it.
Right. I definitely didn't start doing consulting, especially working with teens and their families, to get rich. And we talk about being mission driven, and that's the reason why I actually love doing this work, is because I love watching teens do something more incredible than they possibly can imagine. And I think that's one thing that is a very misrepresented point that, and there again, if you put it out there in the scandals and with the numbers that we've seen, they're very unrepresentative of the greater majority of people who are doing this work, because they love working with students and they love seeing them succeed.
You're right. And let's all be honest, us talking about purpose and meaning is unsexy for the media.
Yes. Why is integrity not more sexy than it should be?
And I think another point that I don't think we've actually revealed to listeners before, but you and I are both first-gen college students, I believe.
Yeah, I actually, I think we both navigated the system successfully and didn't have those to actually show us the way or were knowledgeable about it. And I think that's actually something that I'm very proud of. And that's something I think drives me to have other students who have the opportunity to do the same thing.
Could not have said it better myself. Well, this has been a juicy session with you, Mark. I look forward to the next one. It might be more mundane.
Less scandalous.
Less scandalous.
Less salacious.
But we hope you all have a wonderful day. And just keep in mind that, you know, you really can make the most of this situation. And it's not as unfair or disadvantaged as the media might purport it to be.
Well said.
Thanks for listening to College Admissions with Mark and Anna, where we make getting into college easy and fun. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and subscribe to get updated each time we release a new episode. Also, for more helpful college admissions information, visit our website at www.collegeadmissionspodcast.com.